Well, the actor Macaulay Culkin and I have something in common. We have the same birthday. Well, that's not actually all that important. But I brought him up because I was such a fan of his childhood movie, Home Alone. It's classic 90s goodness for anyone else who remembers. A Chicago family goes on holiday and accidentally leaves their son Kevin at home alone. He was left behind. It's an entertaining story. But as we think about the plot of that movie and being home alone or being left behind, we wonder, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? From the perspective of the parents, it's their worst nightmare. From the perspective of Kevin, it starts off as the best time he's ever had. He's jumping on beds. He's eating whatever he likes. He is acting on every enjoyable impulse conceived in the mind of an 8-year-old. When we come to a text like ours, we want to be asking a similar question. In the mind of Jesus and his disciples, is being left behind a good thing or a bad thing? And this is what we're going to study this morning, and the answer may indeed surprise you. For context, remember that what we're reading here is part of a much bigger prophecy that Jesus gave regarding the destruction of Jerusalem and her temple. The disciples, understandably perplexed by Jesus' prophecy, asked him, "When will these things be? When will your prophecy come true?" Which brings us to a set of cyclical answers that Jesus gives. He warns his disciples that preceding the fulfillment of his prophecy, there will be signs preceding this destruction of Jerusalem. He also signaled to them the theological significance of this judgment. All of this in the language and imagery reminiscent of the Old Testament prophets. Jesus is standing as the greatest of Old Testament prophets when he gives this. More than this, Jesus also told us upon who this prophecy will expire. Upon who will this prophecy be executed? And this is a really important detail for us as modern readers of the Bible to get right, because it helps us figure out whether Jesus was thinking about an event way off in the future, or was he speaking about something in his near future? When you read Matthew 24, is Jesus talking about something way off in the distant future, or is he talking about something that's going to happen in his near future? It is very important that we get this detail right. Fortunately, as we read the text of Matthew, Jesus drops a number of timestamps to help us out. He gives us a number of timestamps to figure this out. From the end of Matthew 23 and into Matthew 24, Jesus leaves us these timestamps. In Matthew 23:36, prophesying the judgment that is about to come upon Judaism, Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation," the one to whom he is speaking. All these things will come upon this generation. Further to this, throughout Jesus' prophecy, he spoke directly to his own generation, saying, "Then they will offer you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake." Jesus' wording here, if you were in his audience, the wording strongly suggests that Jesus was connecting his prophecy with his immediate audience, with that generation to whom he was speaking, not a people way off in the distant future. And further still, and perhaps most conclusively, Jesus said again in Matthew 24:34, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things," the whole prophecy, "takes place." Right? This generation will not pass away until everything that I have just prophesied takes place. That's Jesus' conclusion as to when the timestamps apply. So, Jesus' timestamps indicates to us that his prophecy was to be fulfilled in totality within the generation of people alive at the time when Jesus delivered his prophecy, which, incidentally, corresponds precisely with the destruction of Jerusalem and her temple in 70 AD. It fits very tidily with that event. Now, I also mentioned that Jesus' prophecy is somewhat cyclical. As you work your way through Matthew 24, there's a cycle that you become aware of. And what I mean by this is that Jesus makes his point, he answers the question initially, and then he circles back to add a bit more detail. And then he circles back again to add another bit of detail. It's like an artist working away at a masterpiece. He comes back to fill in more of the prophetic picture. And this brings us to our text. Starting in verse 36, Jesus goes back one more time to fill in more detail. And this time, the detail appears somewhat cryptic. The detail is mysterious. People are disappearing. It's the kind of thing that you might find in a sci-fi movie, right? People are vanishing without a trace. What's going on? Verse 40 to 41. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and one left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and one left. I really want us to make sense of this. I really want us to get a handle on what's going on here. So we're asking, when Jesus speaks about people being taken without warning, suddenly, without warning, are these disappearances a good thing or a bad thing? To ask it another way, is being taken in this text something we want or something we want to avoid? Do you want to be the taken or do you want to be the left behind? That's the kind of question we need to get to. To answer this, we must slot ourselves into a biblical frame of reference, particularly an Old Testament frame of reference. We must think like the prophets thought. If we don't, we'll miss Jesus' imagery here. We'll miss what he is actually doing with his words here. He is, after all, speaking like the very best of prophets. He is using their language, their images, their categories of thinking. So how did the Old Testament prophets use the imagery of being left behind and the imagery of being taken? There are an abundance of examples that we could turn to, but Isaiah is as good a starting point as any. In Isaiah, we read this, "In that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. Everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem. When the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of Jerusalem from its midst by a spirit of judgment and by a spirit of burning." Notice these things. Those who remain, those who are left behind in Jerusalem, according to Isaiah, will be called holy. The left behind are the holy ones. In Isaiah's mind, at a time of covenantal cleansing, which is what Jesus' prophecy is largely about, it is a covenantal cleansing of the Judaic order. In a time of covenantal cleansing, being left behind is a good thing. Whereas those who are purged, those that are taken away or washed away, according to Isaiah, face a burning judgment. So consider that being taken away is an explicit sign of judgment found elsewhere in Isaiah also. To be taken away is a category of prophetic thinking of judgment. In chapter 39, verses 6 to 7, we find this: "Behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house and that which your fathers have stored up till this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. And some of your own sons who will come from you, whom you will father, shall be taken away. Your sons shall be taken away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon." In Isaiah's mind, to be taken away, and in this case, to be exiled to Babylon, was a sign of judgment, not salvation. To be taken away, in Isaiah's mind, is a sign of judgment, not salvation. Not unique to Isaiah either. In Jeremiah, we find this: "Therefore I am full of wrath, full of the wrath of the Lord, and I am weary of holding it in. Pour it out upon the children in the street and upon the gatherings of young men also." So the context here is clearly that of judgment, very similar to Jerusalem, right? The context is judgment. "Both husband and wife shall be taken away. The elderly and the very aged, their houses shall be turned over to others, their fields and wives together, for I will stretch out my hand against the inhabitants of the land, declares the Lord." So in this, I hope a picture is starting to form in your minds. In the prophets, the thought of being taken is actually to fall under the judgment of God. And when we look at a prophet like Zephaniah, we actually see the reverse of this. Whereas Isaiah and Jeremiah tells us that being taken is to be taken into judgment, Zephaniah paints us the opposite picture. He tells us to be left behind. Those who are left behind are God's people, those who receive his mercy and blessing. Zephaniah 3, we find this: "But I will leave in your midst." Notice the language there. "I will leave. I will leave them behind. I will leave in your midst a people humble and lowly. They shall seek refuge in the name of the Lord, those who are left in Israel. They shall do no injustice and speak no lies, nor shall there be found in their mouth a deceitful tongue. For they shall graze and lie down, and no one shall make them afraid." Now, this is the paradigm of the Old Testament prophets, that being taken is to be taken into judgment, and to be left behind is to be the blessed, those who receive the mercy of God. And if this is the Old Testament paradigm, remember that Jesus is schooled in the Old Testament. He is their greatest prophet. And if that is their paradigm, could it not be that Jesus, the greatest prophet of all, was evoking the exact same concepts of being left behind and taken away? Could it not be that that is exactly the kind of image that is stirring in Jesus' mind when he quotes these prophets? Surely it's worth considering, right? It's worth entertaining the idea. You know, the idea of being taken into judgment and to be left behind, blessed in the mercy of God, it's actually confirmed for us somewhere else in Jesus' own teaching. In Matthew 13, Jesus gave a parable of a farmer who sowed a field of wheat, but a scoundrel enemy went and sowed weeds in that exact same field. He sabotaged the man's harvest. But when time came for the harvest, The harvesters separated the weeds from the wheat and took the weeds away to be burned. To which Jesus gave this explicit explanation. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so will it be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of the kingdom. They will take out of the kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Again, if we're paying attention to the way Jesus used these images of being taken away and those that are left behind, to be taken is, in Jesus' own parable here, to be taken into a situation of judgment. You know, perhaps for some of us, these conclusions are a little bit uneasy to accept. They're difficult to accept. After all, many of our most popular TV preachers, some of whom are true brothers in the faith, men of courage and conviction, faithful and serious about the scriptures, have come to very different conclusions about this text, teaching that being left behind is a bad thing, while being taken is the good and blessed thing, something that we ought to look forward to. What I've tried to do this morning is present to you from the Bible a framework, a biblical framework of how the Old Testament prophets thought about these things, thought about things like being taken and being left behind. And my case is that there is a blessedness about being left behind, whereas to be taken is actually an Old Testament way of speaking of being taken into judgment. That is my conviction about these texts. But could I just offer you, if you're still struggling to believe me on this, could I just offer to you Jesus' own teaching in Luke 17? The gospel writer Luke provides us a parallel account of Jesus' prophecy. But he includes some revealing details that are not included in Matthew. Listen to Jesus' words here. I tell you, in that night there will be two in one bed. One will be taken and the other left. There will be two women grinding together. One will be taken and one left. We're dealing with the exact same subject matter as Matthew chapter 24 here. It's the same teaching. But what's interesting here about Luke 17 is that we have an answer to a very relevant question. Jesus' disciples asked him, "Where, Lord? Where, Lord?" As in, where are the taken being taken to? Where are they going? If one's being taken away, where? Where are they being taken to? To which Jesus answers them, where the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Here Jesus clearly equates being taken with Deuteronomic curses and judgments coming upon a covenantally unfaithful people. This is straight out of Deuteronomy. This is one of the curses that was promised if they were to be unfaithful to their Lord and God. Namely, they would have an open grave where scavenging animals would desecrate their body. It is a picture of judgment once again. Where are they going, Lord? And Jesus says, they're not going to a good place. They're off to suffer Deuteronomic curses for their unfaithfulness to their covenant with Yahweh. All these factors, The way that the Old Testament prophets and Jesus explained by what they meant by being taken away has led me to this conviction. Being taken is a biblical category of being taken into judgment, not salvation. And to be left behind is to be left to enjoy God's kingdom as the righteous and the blessed people of God. Finally then, as we come back to our text, I want to speak to just one last possible objection to what I have tried to teach this morning. Jesus said the coming destruction of Jerusalem and her temple would be akin to the days of Noah. Let's look at verses 37 through to 39. As were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking and giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Just a quick note for those who have joined us for the first time in the series. As I've explained in previous messages, this is not the second coming of Christ as we typically think of it. This is a reference to the Son of Man coming in judgment against Jerusalem. That is the coming of the Son of Man being talked about here. The Son of Man coming to judge Jerusalem and her temple. Be that as it may, surely this indicates to us that Noah and his family were taken away, spared, and not judged. So what are we to make of this? Has everything that I've said up to this point destroyed because of this argument? With the minutes remaining, let me briefly speak to this. While it's true that Noah and his family were, from our cursory perspective, were taken away in an ark before the flood, we must keep in mind that Noah and his family were actually the only ones left. They were the only ones to remain on earth. They were the only ones left behind. All others were swept away. They were swept away into judgment. They were taken away in judgment. Indeed, this is how Genesis itself explains the flood of judgment. In Genesis 7:23, it is written, God blotted out every living thing that was on the face of the ground, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens. They were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left. Only Noah was left and those who were with him in the ark. So, according to Genesis, who was left behind? Noah. Who was taken from the earth in judgment? Everything else. This is how the Bible itself talks about these things. So, when we come to a tricky text like ours, and Matthew 24 is a difficult text, I don't pretend it's not. It is a difficult text, but to understand it, of these people vanishing without a trace, it's important that we approach a text like that through a biblical lens. We are to approach difficult texts through the filters, cues, categories, and concepts given to us in the biblical literature itself. The Bible is its own best interpreter. Let the Bible interpret the difficult passages for you. Find the categories in which it thinks and then apply it to the difficult text. Jesus prophesied a judgment event, namely the destruction of Jerusalem and her temple, as a result of the Judaic covenantal defection. They had rejected their Messiah, and for that they are judged. And Matthew 24 speaks to that historically verifiable event. It happened in history. Many, many sources prove this. To his disciples, the image of being left behind would have sounded hopeful to them. If they have read their Old Testament prophets, when Jesus said someone is going to be left behind, they would have gone, ah, that's a good thing. Someone will be spared. Someone will receive mercy from God. That is, being left behind would have sounded hopeful to the people, to God's people, people allied to Jesus the Messiah, because they would receive mercy even as many adherents of Judaism would be taken away in judgment. And no doubt, those disciples to whom Jesus prophesied a sudden disturbance to their lives would have taken Jesus' words to heart and lived in a state of readiness for what lay ahead. They would have lived, if Jesus prophesies to his generation, that's maybe the maximum of probably 40 years, that temple is going to be dismantled brick by brick. The church in Jerusalem would have lived in a state of readiness for that to happen. They would have accepted Jesus' word as true. They would have lived lightly. They would have lived in unity in their fellowship. They would have lived with generous and open hands, which is precisely what is recorded for us in Acts chapter 2, where the church had everything in common. They lived that way because they didn't anticipate staying in Jerusalem very long. That is, in obedience to Jesus, the Jerusalem church readied herself for the coming catastrophe of 70 AD. And church father Athanasius noted their readiness. When Jesus said, "When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house, neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes." Knowing these things, knowing what Jesus prophesied, the saints regulated their conduct accordingly. They lived as though Jesus' word is true, which it is. And this is the good lesson for us to take from a passage and prophecy like Matthew chapter 24. When Jesus speaks, we are to live in light of his word, bringing the whole shape of our lives into conformity with that word. When Jesus beckons us to renounce our sins and to turn to him in faith, we are to believe his word and turn to him wholeheartedly. When Jesus tells us, "No man comes to the Father but by him," we are to accept his authority to say truthfully that which may be difficult to hear. When Jesus tells us, "In my Father's house are many rooms, if it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you?" we are to be reminded that Jesus has not left us or abandoned us. He is readying eternity for us and readying us for eternity with him in his Father's house. So come, come and turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face.